Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And we want to catch up now with Doug Glanville, the former Cubs player, UPenn engineering grad, lecturer at both UPenn and Yale, and as you may know, NBC Sports Chicago commentator who was racially taunted live on camera while broadcasting from Wrigley Field during a Cubs game. Well, he was, wasn't he? That's the headline of the op-ed he wrote for the New York Times. "I was racially taunted on television, wasn't I?" Because people debated whether the fan making an upside-down OK sign near Doug's face meant it as the white supremacist symbol it is, or was playing some silly circle game. There's a picture at herenow.org, but the Cubs decided it was racist. They banned that fan from the park. Doug Glanville joins us now. Doug, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So take us through what happened. You were giving your commentary at a Cubs game, the same field where you started your baseball career. Did you notice this fan?
I did not. Certainly not at the time. Yeah. I was, you know, just doing what we do, a live hit, and I'm in the dugout. I'll come out for a specific inning, and the camera, what we call high first, will shoot down all the way across the field to zoom in tight on me. This person was somewhat behind me. He wasn't directly behind me, but I had no idea. And it wasn't until later when I was kind of going through my Twitter feed that I saw all this ruckus, realized there was a lot more going on.
Yeah, your Twitter feed is exploding. You had people debating what had happened. It was the same sign flashed by the New Zealand mosque shooter at his trial. So what were people saying?
Well, I mean, it was a firestorm of debate. And certainly right out of the gate, there was this, well, is this a circle game? A lot of kids play, even in the minor leagues, I was familiar with it.
It's like you use this hand sign down, you know, below your waist to try to get people to look.
Right. And then there's, of course, the other conversation, which was threading around the white supremacist and the New Zealand shooter, trying to figure out and unpack what actually the intent of the fan, all these things. So you started to see all this speculation also flow through. I had a lot of phone calls from, you know, my parent company, NBC Sports Chicago, and also the Cubs, Chicago Cubs.
Well, we should be very clear. The Cubs investigated the incident, took it very seriously, and they determined that the man was, in fact, making a racist gesture. They banned him from the field. So they're not at all confused about this. But talk about this conversation that starts that you are painfully aware of as an African-American in America, of people saying, oh, you're just reading into this.
Yeah, and I want to underscore what you just said about how this investigation sort of played. The Cubs did on their own, even before I even got back to the hotel, had already kind of gotten into figuring out what they believed to be the intent. They felt it was more than likely that this was some sort of racially charged white supremacy sign. And what I tried to unpack was the idea of ambiguity. Racism and experiencing racism as an African-American in the United States often comes through this lens of ambiguity. In fact, sometimes it's for the purpose, express purpose to mask intent, but it's also the sort of fine line and sort of nuance that sometimes comes with moments that you experience that you attribute to race or identity. The cab came by and didn't pick you up. This has happened to me a number of times. Well, this has happened enough in a pattern that you start to connect the dots. There can be something as dramatic as, you know, someone, you know, burning a cross on your lawn, which thankfully has not happened to me. But, you know, some of the things that are a little bit more subtle, whether it's prejudicial or biased, which did happen to me, a police officer asking me if I'm shoveling to make money when I was actually standing in my own driveway shoveling. Mm. So this ambiguity is so painful because it forces you at times to question your own sort of lens by which you're looking at it. And you try to rule out things, hoping that it's something else, as opposed to this labeling, as you say, race baiting, you're playing the race card as if that's your first card in your deck. But when you have a pattern throughout so many different parts of your life, whether it's trying to buy a home, trying to get your kids in a school, you know, walking to the store, whatever it may be, you have enough information to sort of be able to extrapolate at different times the undercurrent of your experience. And And I think that ambiguity can be very torturous.
Well, as you write, ambiguity is a friend to racism. And white supremacists know this. I mean, you remind us that some people think that this sign itself, this OK sign as a white supremacist symbol, came up as a prank to get the media to overreact to innocuous gestures. In other words, hey, let's make believe this sign is something and then everybody will overreact. And it'll add to that sense that you've just described of people like you being questioned, like, oh, why are you looking for racism in that? And then the sign actually became a genuine expression of white supremacy. But again, it's still ambiguous enough that you have to not only have that racist gesture on television, but you have to deal with people saying, oh, why are you seeing it that way?
Right. Well, and the key word is taunting, because there is a taunting that you can possibly even flirt and play with this idea, the psychological warfare around racism. Right. You know, so, no, I don't have to blatantly call you the N-word to create all these sort of ripple effects that emotionally, psychologically play into your experience as an African-American in this country.
Right. Which is why you say that it really kind of doesn't even matter what the fan intended. And you write another great example. You give the example of somebody who may love rodeos, and they're in the same office as you, and they hang a lasso, a lariat, a rope with a loop at their desk. Well, that's, you know, an intention to honor cowboys. He loves rodeos. But you also have the right, as an African-American, to be offended by that because you see a noose. But what, that doesn't mean that he's racist.
Right, and these two worlds can collide. And I tried to step back to take in that many symbols we have may have began in innocuous formats.
And you may be offended, and maybe you can both have a conversation about that, and he can say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, this is about rodeos, and I'm sorry that triggered you, and you can say, yeah, it's just the symbol. But it could also be somebody purposely putting that out there and lying.
Well, we saw this in the news throughout, I guess it was at the plants, right? GMC, I think, went through it, was General Motors. Some people were, you know, vehemently denying, you know, and so yeah, there was clearly like, why are you hanging a noose in a car factory or what? And I think the real pernicious, sometimes poisonous aspect is when someone is aware of that duality and still wants to kind of throw it out there and flirt it out there to create this tension. And the irony of the circle game, by the way, this idea that you make the symbol and make someone look, it is actually fitting because you're often with these type of experience with racism and the nuance of racism, you are trying to make someone look somewhere else to take away or change the reality that still exists and that are often woven in sometimes institutionally into our country.
Well, you say we have to acknowledge racism takes place not only with fire hoses, but with whispers and hand signs. But I just have to ask you, Doug Glanville, again, NBC Sports Chicago commentator, what's happened since? I mean, that's a vulnerable position always, to be broadcasting live in a huge crowd. Are you now maybe a little more feeling vulnerable?
Well, the day after was tough because we had a lot of discussions about security details and safety became a different part of my job. I would say also I'd be remiss in not recognizing the amazing support from the fans
right.
that expressed outrage or I remember leaving the next night, and when I walked through the crowd, as I usually do in the sixth inning when I'm headed back to the studio, I had sections of fans standing up and clapping or waving or just sort of acknowledging, and that was important. There are so many allies that understand and want it to be different, and that appreciation is, you know, how I came in. My experience growing up in Teaneck, New Jersey, was very positive in how I saw an inclusive community. It's been tough just to kind of navigate the aftermath. My Twitter feed, you know, I work with a PR person, you know, she's been blocking a lot of people on Twitter. So, you know, because there's a lot of people flashing OK signs and really upset also at the Cubs' reaction because they thought, oh, well, we're going to ban everybody. We've got to ban every symbol. And so, yeah. And
yeah.
I think some of that's being directed towards me as if it was judge, jury, and executioner, when actually I was calling for due process. I was calling for just open dialogue and discussion.
Well, we wish you the best there, and you've got a thought-provoking op-ed that we will link people to at herenow.org. Doug Glanville, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate you having me on.